Chapter 5. Aubrey was always up before the others. She had always been an early riser. Even as a cub, she had bothered and irritated her mother until he was forced to rise and entertain her before all her other littermates. "My little hunter," he used to say, proud as he could be as he ran his tongue through the frill on her forehead, the mark of a non-fertile, a dominant. She had been the biggest in her litter, and for that she'd always had something to prove, as if she needed people to know that she'd earned it. She'd pounced and played and fought until she'd made sure that everyone knew she was the best fighter in her litter group. When she was still too small to go off into the forest by herself, she would stalk and pounce bugs, challenging herself to land a fly, despite their quick and unpredictable movements. After that, it was lizards and garter snakes, chasing them into the brush with her mother yelling after her. Now, entering her 21st summer, Aubrey was outranked in size only by the Alpha and a few others, and as good a hunter as any dominant. In the fall, she would enter the fights to take her place as a Beta, the most honored guard of the Alpha and the Pride. She hadn't yet fought for a fertile, but that was only because none had caught her eye. She preferred to avoid the dances and squabbles between dominants in favor of going her own way, not wanting to posture like a fool. At least, that had been true last year. Christopher, a fertile from the litter group just behind her own, was making himself available after turning away suitors for the last few years. She couldn't deny that his lithe form had caught her eye more than once, the way he skipped over rocks in the river as if afraid to get his paws wet, the way he composed himself, sure and proud, turning down dominance even in the thick of his heat. She had played with him as cubs, and she remembered his quick mind, the way he worked out how to open nuts when they all went exploring as children, or how he'd managed to scale one of the tallest trees on the top of the ridge, despite how thin it was, and the way it twisted in the wind. He was brave and smart, a beautiful fertile that any dominant would covet, and for the first time in her life, Aubrey found herself wanting to preen in posture, to put herself on display for his careful eye. If she could ever imagine mounting the back of any fertile, it would be him. She had always been an early riser, but these days she found herself getting up even earlier, as early as she would have to get up for when a hunting party was planned. The air was always cool and thin just before dawn, the thready lines of mist still lingering as the whispering voice of Brigna chased away the light of the night. The midsummer heat would be upon them soon, and Christopher hadn't chosen a suitor during his spring heat. Aubrey was determined to be his choice if he settled upon a suitor this season, to prove to Christopher that she could provide for their potential cubs. No hunter brought home a juicier feast than the first hunter on the field, and today she planned to gift him with a haunch of young venison, a spry fawn, perhaps, or, if she was particularly lucky and able, a porcupine to show her cunning. She could already picture the look in his eyes, fierce and proud of himself, preening in his ability to have dominance falling all over themselves, except Aubrey. She wouldn't strut about like a fool. She would drag her kill to his doorstep and hold her head high, spread her frill and let him see the marks of blood on her coat. He would see what a fine hunter she was, what a superb dominant, and know that Aubrey only had eyes for him. It was how her father had won her mother's love, and Aubrey groomed her paw calmly in the pre-dawn light, sitting outside her home as she took in the scents of the mountains, letting the wind sing her its story, bringing in the sweet smell of pine and the dried-out dung left by the prey she would soon be hunting. The weedy grass of the heath balds, laurels, and the thick pollen of the woods. It was all a story, one that her father had taught her to read as clear as any book, and the forest was just that, a book, willing to open its pages to her, spill all its secrets. She paused, though, when it told her of another scent. an allure, sharp and distinctive, but she was used to being the only one up at this time. She glanced around for a guard, wondering if one of the betas had roamed back home from their patrols of Pride Ground, but she didn't see any of them. The scent came with the brackish smell of the river, water thick with nutrients and rot, obscuring the innate scent of the allure, and Aubrey hopped over a few rocks, down the long hill of Pride Ground until she came to a small rise, able to look down to where the ground ran to the tree line and beyond that, the river. For a moment, there was silence. Then the unsteady steps of an allure that wasn't even bothering to hide their noise, clumsy and ill-trained, or perhaps not trained at all, knocking sticks and leaves this way and that, alerting everything around it to its presence long before it was visible. A few seconds later, Aubrey saw it emerge from the tree line, long and lean, no frill or mane, a fertile, though it had strange dark markings on its forelegs and back, almost like a dominance striping. It seemed to have some kind of bag on its back, and she wasn't quite sure what color its coat was because it was dulled with mud and whatever remained from the river. From its mouth dangled a cub. Aubrey blinked, wondering what one of the young mothers was doing up at this hour, with a cub no less. But then the scent came through on an updraft, sudden and strong. Stranger. This wasn't one of theirs. This was an outsider. Aubrey tensed, muscles locking stiffly at the perceived threat. It was bred into her not to attack a fertile, to always treat them with respect and honor, but it was also bred into her to protect and defend her pride, and she crouched down just a little, ears going back and lips curling up. She hissed, loud and clear, a threat. She wouldn't attack, not without provocation, not a fertile, and not with a cub in the way. But she still needed it to be known that she was here and she was a danger. She hissed again, tail whipping back and forth, a twisting whine building in her throat, a warning yowl. Behind her, she could hear doors opening, but she didn't take her eyes off the newcomer. The betas would be here soon. Finding the Blue Ridge Pride hadn't been easy. It wasn't as if they provided maps at the local gas and go or anything. The Werecat Pride was protected by federal law, the only trail that went into their land being the Appalachian Trail, and even that was on the outside of their hunting ground. Jared had done his research before deciding to move out here, after all. The laws extended to the point that their land was considered a no-fly zone to keep adventurous tourists from attempting to skydive in. While it was one of those well-known secrets that the Pride lived not too far outside of Bryson, on the edge of the Nantahala, that still left hundreds of thousands of acres to explore, and the whole area had been set up to keep noisy humans out. Jared might have had a tail and fluffy ears, but he was still human where it counted, and every stupid trap or misleading path or sign had done its job sending him off in the wrong direction. It had taken him and Tristan almost a week to get their bearings, Jared the farthest thing from an expert tracker, cursing himself again for dozing off in all those lessons in Boy Scouts. And by the time he'd managed to locate the Pride, he wasn't exactly in tip-top shape. Mud was caked in the fur on his paws and up his legs, burrs sticking in his tail and leaves and twigs dangling from his coat. His pack wasn't doing so well either. There had been a point where he'd decided that crossing the river seemed like a good idea, where it had looked pretty calm and shallow. Lies. All lies. He'd tripped on a stone and gone tumbling into an unseen dark spot, deeper than it looked, and only luck and tenacity kept Tristan from being swept out of his mouth. He'd managed to scramble his way up onto a boulder, setting the wriggling, wet cub down, Jared's huge claws all extended, scraping against stone to keep them there. Once his heart had stopped racing, he'd taken Tristan back into his jaws, carefully picking his way through the water. They'd eventually made their way across, safe and sound, but all of Jared's clothes had gotten soaked with river water, and while he'd dried them in the sun, the stink hadn't really faded. And that wasn't the only problem. Hunting and tracking in unfamiliar territory was just about impossible while on the move. Jared was unable to get a sense of where the local animal populations were, where the best den ground was, and for the last 3 days, the most he'd managed to catch was the errant beetle. He was getting desperate. The hunger he'd been feeling over the last few weeks had built into a clamor now, one that was so loud that he couldn't think of anything else, even just laying there on moving when Tristan nursed from him, the kitten draining whatever milk Jared's starving body was capable of producing. On the 8th night of travel, Jared hadn't bothered to stop. If he didn't find the pride soon, he would stop making milk. As it was, he'd noticed his reserves were getting low. Tristan was still as perfectly round as before, and Jared was soothed by that. But he couldn't risk the kitten's safety. With Tristan's nape in his teeth, he'd staggered through the night, paws unsteady on the ground as he dodged trees that seemed to come out of nowhere, eyes blinking blearily. After a while, he stopped even trying to guide himself, too tired and too hungry, too utterly wiped, and he was just putting one paw in front of the other, the only thought in his mind, keep going, don't stop, just keep moving forward, until all conscious thought shut down. Like he was in a mist, a fugue, and he was aware that his body was moving, but he didn't know where to. Perhaps he was moving in circles, an endless and hopeless loop, lost deep in the forest. How pathetic would it be that Tristan survived a ride down the river, fresh from his mother's womb, outlived all his siblings, only to die because his stupid nursemaid got them lost. It was more than Jared's foggy mind could contemplate. In the darkness, he saw movement, shapes and living shadows, but none of it was real. He just kept going, determined that if he could, somehow, some way, he would be guided to salvation. When the sky was just beginning to lighten, Jared stepped out from the forest and found himself looking at a cabin. He paused, staring, and God, had he come all this way only to stumble into some campground? He swayed a little, sidestepping to get his balance, before turning to continue walking, making his way up a slope that he knew wasn't extreme, but it felt like Everest all the same. Through the rushing white noise in his ears, he heard a sound, something that was getting louder, something that sounded like a cop siren or an ambulance speeding down the highway. Jared remembered cool glass against his cheek, staring out the window with his brothers fighting in the background, the soothing voice of their father only barely heard over the squeak of their car's bad shocks, bouncing with every pothole as they drove through the night towards home, street lamps passing by in steady sequence. Jared glanced to the side, half expecting to see one of those streetlights marking his way home, and jumped when he saw instead a cat almost twice his size standing on a ledge. It was hissing at him, its teeth long and deadly looking, bright white poking out of pinkish gums. Jared took a few stumbling steps back, almost dropping Tristan, but the other cat didn't follow him. It kept hissing, a constant threat, but made no move to attack. Jared stared at it for a long moment, but when nothing happened, he began to move past. It followed, tail flicking around like a whip. He kept waiting for the pounce, to feel claws sinking into his flank, but with each hesitant step, none came, and he continued upwards. The slope he was on was mostly clear of trees, but not exactly a clearing. There was the occasional trunk pushing up from between the rocks, but the area was sparser than most places in the forest. Laid out in no particular pattern, all spread apart, were a few dozen cabins. Some were on the main path leading up the hill, while others were seated further back in the wood. But one by one, Jared could see lights coming on, people walking out with gas lamps in hand, along with surly-looking werecats. Jared had never seen so many in one place. The threatening yowls and hisses followed him up the hill, but he began to relax into it when no attacks came. It was like being the center of the world's most negative parade. Jared almost went back into his trance, despite his dramatic welcome, staring down at the sedimentary rock beneath him as he moved forward, until a large set of paws filled his vision, and Jared stumbled to a halt. His eyes traced up the long, muscular legs, the thick auburn coat, coming nose to nose with a werecat as massive as the first. Bright blue eyes bored into Jared's, and all he could do was stare, not even having the energy to feel the terror he knew he was experiencing at some level. The werecat leaned forward, hot blasts of air coming from its nose as it sniffed, and Jared shrank back. The world was rapidly narrowing, vision blurring out at the edges, those blue eyes seeming to grow huge and unreal. Fear and adrenaline shook through a body ill-prepared, several nights with no sleep blending with several weeks of not eating enough, compounded by an almost unbroken fast going on 36 hours. The sky wasn't lightening. Dawn wasn't coming. The world was turning backwards, reversing itself and spinning into night. Jared's jaw began to weaken. "Who are you?" A foreign voice entered his head, and it was the last straw his body could carry. He wasn't aware of hitting the ground, only the twist of reality spinning up, the sky filling his vision before it cut out completely, and he collapsed.